Welcome to the Profit Business Cast, Canada's podcast for innovative entrepreneurs and executives. And brought to you by Bennett Gold LLP Chartered Accountants. Here is your host, Robert Gold.
Once again, from high atop the Business Cast Podcast Center in Toronto, live and in the morning, we're way off to the west. I can see Birdtail, Manitoba. I'm Robert Gold, Managing Partner of Bennett Gold LLP, Chartered Accountants in Toronto, and this podcast is produced in partnership with Profit Magazine and ProfitGuide.com. Today, I am so excited. We're kicking off our series on equity crowdfunding. It's a whole new regime in Ontario and across the country, and joining us today, our first is a panel, Rebecca Kakaba. Rebecca is a partner at Aird & Burliss, and we're joined by her associate, Graham Toppa. Rebecca, Graham, welcome to the Profit Business Cast.
Thanks, Robert. Happy to be here.
I am so impressed by what you've done at Aird & Burliss, airdburliss.com, as far as startup funding, crowdfunding. You have approached it in a very, very smart way. Lots of good information. So let's step back a bit. If I can ask each of you to tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that your firm does in corporate finance and with startups.
We'd love to. So our blog is www.startupsource.ca, and that is basically an aggregator of information for startups. It gives information on what's happening in the industry from a Toronto focus. We have a calendar of events going on in and around Toronto that might be useful for startup companies, profile some recent deals that we've done, and interviews with other successful founders who are always providing interesting links and tips for our visitors. So we encourage you to check out that source as well. We have a flat fee program, deferred fee program for qualifying startups. So we encourage you to get in touch with us through our blog and see how we can help you.
So tell us that domain again.
That's www.startupsource.ca.
Startupsource.ca. It's a great site. Okay, Graham, let's throw one to you. At a very high level, what do our listeners need to understand about the new crowdfunding regime in Ontario, Manitoba, Quebec, New Brunswick, and Nova Scotia? This is the new reality, and we are all focused here in Ontario.
Thanks, Robert. I think the most important thing for your listeners to take in right now is that it's a whole new regime, and it's going to present a different avenue for issuers to raise capital. There is a lot of compliance and rules regarding how this is going to actually play out, but I think, generally speaking, it's a great development for Ontario and for the other provinces that have adopted the crowdfunding regime.
So we want to focus this conversation, we're doing a bit of a panel with the three of us, on the funding portals. They're known as restricted dealer funding portals. Is that something that's different in Canada compared to other countries around the world where equity crowdfunding has come to bear?
The U.S. hasn't really got their rules in place yet, but from what we've seen, it looks like what's happening in the U.S. will end up being substantially similar to what we are doing. And I think it's important to point out that through the portals, issuers are really getting access to a whole new avenue of investors, being a retail level of investors that previously they couldn't access through the prospectus exemptions.
You know, I wonder if we should step back a second and actually define what is equity crowdfunding as opposed to what people are familiar with on Indiegogo or Kickstarter, which is all perks and prizes.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, previously you could go out and offer people an opportunity to pre-purchase your product for a specific price. This is different because now people are actually allowed to buy shares or debt securities or other specific types of securities in the business. So they're actually permitted to become co-owners.
Now, there are quite a few restrictions, as I understand it, though, on the amount that individuals can invest, whether they are a creditor or other investors. Can we just summarize that briefly?
There's two different classifications. There's the accredited investor, which is basically you're a sophisticated investor. You have certain assets or you meet certain financial tests. And accredited investors are able to contribute more or sort of rely on the crowdfunding exemption to a greater extent than a non-accredited investor, which would be the individuals who may not meet those financial tests. And so for a non-accredited investor, they're limited to a maximum investment in a single issuer of $2,500 per year and a maximum aggregate investment of $10,000 per year, whereas accredited investors are limited to a maximum of $25,000 per investment and a maximum aggregate investment of $50,000 per year when they're relying on the crowdfunding exemption. And I think it's important that we specify that when they're relying on the crowdfunding exemption, because an accredited investor could fall under the accredited investor prospectus exemption and they would not be subject to these limits.
From the perspective of companies raising money, is there a limit on how much they can raise on an annual basis from the crowd?
There is. An issuer can raise up to $1.5 million in any 12-month period relying on the crowdfunding exemption.
What we've been finding with our discussion of the rules, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, is that what many people may not know is in structuring your rounds of financing, there are different exemptions you can use, and you want to put some thought into, you know, there's exemptions like private issuer, which if you start out using those, you can continue to use them. And then once you go outside of the box of the rules of those exemptions, you can't use them anymore. And so it'll be interesting for us to strategize with the startups as to how they're going to raise their funding, when they expect to do an early stage round and then a Series A or a Series B, what exemptions they want to rely on, and make sure that they don't box themselves out of certain exemptions. As well, because the crowdfunding entails a lot of reporting requirements that the other exemptions don't use, they're going to want to strategize with legal counsel like us as to which exemptions are best to attack. Again, the crowdfunding exemption gives you an opportunity to access retail investors you can't under other exemptions, but if you're dealing with somewhat sophisticated investors or accredited investors, it may be beneficial to rely on other exemptions because there's a cost-saving benefit.
Now, I think this is a good time to mention crowdfundingsummit.ca. The National Crowdfunding Association of Canada on March the 3rd in Toronto is holding its 2016 Crowdfunding Summit. All the information for investors, for portals, for anybody mildly or significantly interested, check that out, crowdfundingsummit.ca. Let's focus in now, guys, if we can, on the portals that companies must register with in order to seek funds from the crowd. What is a restricted dealer funding portal?
There's two basic definitions. A restricted funding portal has to meet certain requirements in securities legislation in National Instrument 31103. They're quite extensive, and if people want to get into that, they should look to those. It's a little bit different. A restricted dealer is not the same as a registered dealer, and whereas a registered dealer funding portal could basically provide some sort of investment device, restricted dealers can't do anything, and they're basically there to facilitate a crowdfunding distribution or transaction. In particular, and I think the most important thing for our listeners in Ontario to register is that with a restricted dealer funding portal. In Ontario, that restricted dealer funding portal cannot be an affiliate of another registered dealer, registered advisor, or registered investment fund manager. So there are some additional restrictions in Ontario specifically. It doesn't mean that other registered dealers won't be participating in the space. It just means that they will be signing up other entities through which they won't be affiliated.
So can I operate a crowdfunding portal? What are the restrictions on those setting them up?
You would have to get registered under the specific crowdfunding requirements. That means that your obligation is to act as a gatekeeper. So you have to do background checks on the issuers in terms of all kinds of searches. You have to review their materials, make sure there's no misrepresentations. But the key is that you can't give investment advice, which is different from, you know, like the banks or the investment banks, the Schedule A banks and their departments. When they're dealing with subscribers, they might be giving their opinion on the investment. A crowdfunding portal is not giving you any kind of opinion on the investment. It's just checking the boxes and making sure the issuer has met the compliance requirements and that they don't have any background of fraud.
Now, let's talk about that for a minute. Is it a significant amount of due diligence and fraud review that must take place? How cursory is this, or how in-depth is this due diligence?
Well, I think that will remain to be seen how engaged the portals get into it. That's sort of a standard that we see develop over time. And, you know, if the Securities Commission doesn't like what people are doing, then they'll put out guidance bulletins or somewhat expanding on the rules and the description. But there are specific set out requirements that they have to comply with.
Now, I understand there's some real restrictions on the marketing that a company can do when it's looking to raise money from the crowd. How does that work?
You see crowdfunding the way it's been done before, where there's a large internet campaigns or social media campaigns. It's far more restrictive with the crowdfunding prospectus exemption and the equity crowdfunding raises. An issuer, if they want to advertise, they would have to basically just direct prospective purchasers to or prospective subscribers to the crowdfunding portal, and all information and all materials relating to that offering have to go through the portal only. They can't be tweeting or using other social media to basically be advertising their offering and their company with respect to their offering. And they would have to simply direct any prospective purchaser to the portal to get the information directly from the funding portal.
All they can say is, we're conducting an offering. Go to this portal to see the details of the offering.
So let's talk about the cost. Is this an expensive process for a company to become registered and go out and seek crowdfunded equity?
Well, a company doesn't have to become registered, so they would register with a portal. So I think in a later series, we'll probably hear what the portals are going to charge the companies to get registered with them, and then they'll take a percentage of the funds raised, presumably, which is typically how it works in financing. So the ongoing obligations, the compliance obligations, are probably what becomes more expensive, because a lot of times we see startups maybe not having their housekeeping as in order as they should. And so because of the ongoing disclosure obligations associated with crowdfunding, within 10 days of certain events, like a change of business or a change of control, they have to give notice to their shareholders. They also have to have an independent public accounting firm do a review of their financial statements and distribute those. If they raise between $250,000 or $750,000, they need to have a full audit if they raise over $750,000.
Legal fees as well are going to fit in, and you would have annual legal work to do, I would imagine.
Yeah, a lot of those reporting requirements, the 10-day reporting requirements and the annual reporting requirements, they're going to need help from legal counsel on complying with those obligations.
So my thought on that is that initially I would think that a company might see this as an expensive way to raise capital. On the other hand, it's a way to get into $1.5 million a year. Once you're in the routine, you're with the portal, your annual compliance costs and using some of the software that's available might in fact minimize on a routine basis because you'll be in the role. So I don't think their company should step back and go, this is way too expensive. I think they need to bite the bullet initially if this is the route they're going to go and get an understanding and prepare to make that initial investment in order to be very successful for years to come. There's no end to this.
I think that's accurate. I think that's true. They'll have to include in their own projections the costs for complying with this regime. They'll have to include the time that it'll take to comply with this regime, and they'll have to be a little more careful about that. But you're right, it does give them access to capital, presuming they can raise up to that amount every year from different retail investors.
So I'm curious, given the work you're doing at your firm and with Startup Source, do you think that equity crowdfunding is going to resonate with companies seeking alternative forms of financing?
I think it remains to be seen, Graham.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Rebecca on that one. I think it does remain to be seen. I mean, it's another tool for companies, and I hope it's well-received. I think it'll be well-received. But when a company's going out there and looking to find capital, raise capital, it gives them one more tool to do so. And I think that's better for issuers. It's better for investors. It's a win-win.
Are there jurisdictions around the world where equity crowdfunding has taken hold over the last year to three, let's say?
There is, yep. We highlighted some of the statistics from the Capital Crowdfunding Advisors in the article Graham and I did, which is available on our blog at www.startupsource.ca. So there are some results from other countries that are showing there's been a positive response to crowdfunding and that companies have been able to go on post-crowdfunding and gain additional investment from the VCs or the bigger angels. Because ultimately, if we take a step back, the way we see the crowdfunding exemption being used is really at the early stages of a company's life cycle.
Startup or small enterprise would be particularly well suited to take advantage of the crowdfunding exemption.
One of the things that I've observed with some of the stats that are out there, and including the stats in your article at startupsource.ca, is that companies tend to do a little bit better after they raise crowdfunding equity. They do a little better in their profits and their bottom line. And my thought is that that's because they finally have brought some discipline to management reporting. They've had to get into their numbers a little more significantly than they ever had to before.
Yeah, that's true. It forces them to be organized early on. I think in the Canadian startup ecosystem, there's also gaps in a startup's ability to raise capital. Sometimes they don't have access to friends and family at the early stages. Before they can show revenues, it can be very tough. And then there's a gap later after the angel round and before they get into the OMERS and the bigger investors, where it can be difficult as well. So ideally, we'll see crowdfunding eliminate that early gap and allow more startups to get off the ground.
Well, I could not agree more. Is there any other comments you'd like to make about the portals before we say goodbye to part one of our panel?
I think it would be useful for us to do just a light overview. We talked a lot about prospectus exemptions and different words like that that I'm not sure all the listeners would be familiar with. So if I can just give a light overview of the way the regime works in Canada, if you're a startup or if you're any kind of company and you want to take people's money in exchange for equity, the rules in Canada work that you have to do an enormous disclosure document called a prospectus, and you have to tell people everything about the business business, what you're going to use the money for, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have ongoing yearly reporting obligations. And so in order to raise money and not have to do that, because that's a very large undertaking, there are certain exemptions from that requirement. And so what equity crowdfunding is, an additional exemption that gives people the opportunity to raise capital in a different way. And this exemption is different than the exemptions we've ever seen before, because it actually does have a little bit of a reporting requirement, and it has a lot more ongoing obligations than some of the other exemptions that are out there.
Well, I really appreciate that. Rebecca Kakuba-Graham, top a partner and associate Ayrton Burless. Check out their work at startupsource.ca. And don't forget to check out crowdfundingsummit.ca for the March 3rd event in Toronto, Crowdfunding Summit 2016. Until next time, I'm Robert Gold, managing partner of Benegold LLP, chartered accountants in Toronto. If you want to know what we know about equity crowdfunding, check us out at benegold.ca. You can find other great episodes of the Profit Business Cast at profitguide.com. See you next time. In the morning, everyone, and good night, Birdtail, Manitoba.
You've been listening to the Profit Business Cast, Canada's business podcast, and brought to you by Benegold LLP, Chartered Accountants. From acceleration to succession, strategy to tax planning, there's a lot more through the door at benegold.ca.